Blog Talk Radio.
Baby, Antonio Montenegro, and I'm a licensed California bail agent, and I'm also the chairman of the American Bail Agents Union of America. Welcome to our season premiere, and tonight's show is about our race and bail in America in 2018. Join me tonight with our co-host, Greta Curtis, our legal analyst and also owner of Boss Bail Bonds. Ladies and gentlemen, on any given day, over 60% of people in jail in California are awaiting trial or sentencing. And many remain detained simply because they cannot afford to post money bail. The results can be devastating. Individuals who spend even a few days in pretrial detention, let alone weeks or even months, can end up losing their jobs, their homes, and their children. The current bail system impacts low-income people and people of color and allows for profit bail industry to profit off of people's freedom. The goal of the money bail reform campaign is to safely and significantly reduce the number of people who are held in jail before their trial. SB 10, authored by Robert Hertzberg, known as the California Money Bail Reform Act, were first introduced in December 2016, and this act would require, among other things, that pretrial services conduct individualized assessments and that no one is incarcerated solely on inability to pay. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight we have a very controversial show ahead for us, and it's very, very interesting. I'm going to take this small break right now, and when we come back, we're going to join live with our co-host, Greta Curtis. We will be right back.
Mm-hmm. the 3rd of September. That day I'll always remember. Yes, I will. 'Cause that was the day that my daddy died. I never got a chance to see him. Never heard nothing but bad things about him. Mama, I'm depending on you. Tell me the truth. Mama just hung her head and said, son, Papa was a rolling stone. Wherever he laid his hat was his home.
And when he died,
all he left us was alone. Papa never was a day in his life.
And Mama, some bad talk going around town saying that Papa had 3 outside children and another wife. And that ain't right.
Heard some talk about Papa doing some storefront preaching. Talking about saving souls and all the time leeching. Stealing in debt and stealing in the name of the Lord. Mama just hung her head and said,
thank you.
Welcome back, America. This is Carlos Antonio Montenegro, licensed California bail agent and chairman of the American Bail Agents Union of America. Welcome to our season premiere tonight, which is broadcasted live from Los Angeles, California. And we have our host tonight. We'd like to welcome our host, Greta Curtis, legal analyst and also the owner of Boss Bail. Ms. Curtis, thank you for joining me on my show tonight, our show tonight. And I'd like to congratulate you as we begin our season premiere, their 2018 year. And how are you today?
Hi, Carlos. I'm fine. Thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure to be on tonight. I look forward to this show.
But it's great, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I've been looking forward to it all week.
That's great. Well, as you know, you're my co-host for the rest of the year here. So for all those people out there that that don't know us, I'm a California bail agent, chairman of the American Bail Agents Union, and Ms. Curtis is a legal analyst, and she is also the owner of Boss Bail in Los Angeles, which is located at 539 South Rampart in Los Angeles, California. And it's at the corner of 6th and Rampart. It's a wonderful bail bonds company that's community-based. And we'd like to invite you to the rest of our season every Friday night at 8 p.m. To join us here tonight. So, Ms. Curtis, tonight, welcome again. And we're going to be talking about race and bail in America today. But I guess when I first put the topic out there, I should have, you know, really included about other topics, too, about race and bail in America, because not only is it about race, but it's about people's sexual orientation. It's about people's ethnicities, their national origin. We have a lot to talk about this year on this show, and it's topics that are very controversial. Now, we also have this SB 10, you know, looming over the bail industry this year. But we also have a lot of issues, which is my department. This is what I'm, you know, being the chairman of the Bail Agents Union, is my department to make sure that employees are treated fairly. And so we're going to go into a lot about that law and about what's right and what's not. And then I would like to, you know, also talk about respecting the constitutional rights of the defendants that we bail out from jail also, because they also have rights too. It's not just about a money, give me your money, get you out of jail, and sayonara, and I'll catch you at the, you know, catch you on the back end. So, but we also have this huge problem about classification of race and bail in America, and we have these really staggering statistics, you know, that talk about that, you know. And I just wanted to go over a few of these, you know, this little, you know, little doodad kind of background about this, where it talks about money bail disproportionately harms people of color. And this now comes from the campaign of Reform Money Bail. Now, as you know, I'm a bail agent, so, I mean, I don't want to get put out of business. I want to make money, too. But I think there's a good way of making money and a bad way.
So who commissioned this survey, this study? Who did this? Who commissioned the study?
It was an organization in 2017 called Campaign to Reform Money Bail. Now, I know there's a lot of propaganda out there, too, but these are really true statistics about the situation, and which leads us and brought us to this point of SB 10 right now, instead of now in front of the state, California State Assembly. So it talks about here, this article says here, let me just read this here a little bit about this. It says people of color are more likely to have bail denied and bail set higher than white people. People of color are more likely to be denied bail. The likelihood of having bail denied is up to 25% higher for Black and Latino people. Black people are assigned higher bail amounts than white people accused of similar offenses. And bail amounts for Black people, men, average 35% higher than those for white men, even when controlling for seriousness of the offense. Nationally, Black and Latino people are less likely than white people to make bail and more likely to sit in jail while awaiting trial. Now, this is, you know, before reading this, as my experience as a bail agent, pretty much I believe this to be true. Bail keeps people in pretrial detention. Nationally, 90% of individuals in jails who remain detained awaiting trial are unable to afford bail. People of color are less likely to be able to afford bail. Black and Latino people are half as likely to be able to afford bail as white people. After money bail is set, Black and Latino people are more than twice as likely as white people to remain stuck in pretrial detention. These racial disparities are especially stark for low-level offenses. For example, the likelihoods of a black and Latino person being detained awaiting trial for a drug offense are 96% and 150% higher than a similar situated white person, respectively.
Wow, that's astronomical.
Now, this last one right here, I said California has the highest bail amounts in the country, contributing to these disproportionate impacts of cash bail on communities of color. And the median bail amount in California is less than five times the national median. On average, county bail levels for the most frequently committed felony offenses increased by approximately 22% between 2002 and 2012, accounting for inflation, whatever that means, okay? And we also know we want to talk about the bail schedule and all these different things. So, you know, without further delay, I'm going to let you go, Tiger. Let's go in and rip them up, and let's chop this thing up and see what's going on here and what's your view, and I'll share my view. If there's anybody out there in the audience that would like to be a guest call-in, you can call in at 657-383-0372. That's 657-383-0372. Let's do it.
Okay. Well, those were some astronomical statistics that you just gave, and I didn't know that California had the highest bail amounts in the country. For a liberal state, we are considered liberal, and a state that's in the forefront for consumer rights and things like that, it's just really mind-boggling that we're at that stage. But you have to still remember that jail is big business. Jail and courts are big business out here. Yeah.
Right. I didn't realize I was working on this project about the different California detention centers and facilities for both men and women. There's over 59 of them, which includes private. But before we even talk about
there
that,
more
can
of
I
them
just...
That, well, there are more of them than we have counties. We have 58 counties.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Holy moly, macaroni.
Wild.
They make a lot of money off of us. And so let me just give two more statistics, because we always talk about black people, white people, Latino people. What about those people with mental health conditions, okay? So I have this statistic here, and this is, these are all things that we want to talk about this year on our show. Now, I recently read an article, LA County Jail is just about ready to start possibly rebuilding their jail. Let's hope it's a state of the art, because it is definitely archaic, behind times, and it's just mind-boggling to go inside there. Sometimes when I have to go and I have to arrest somebody on the outside and I take them on the inside to book them because they jump bail or whatever, it's just amazing the amount of people from different agencies coming in and out, and the amount of people. I heard it's like over 2,500 people being brought into LA County Jail many of the times a day. So here's what this says here. It says here... People with mental health conditions are grossly overrepresented in the criminal justice system. People with mental health conditions are more likely to be arrested and taken to jail. 64% of people in jail have a mental health condition, and every year, 2 million adults with serious mental illnesses are booked into jail, about 17% of all jail admissions. And then we have here, let's talk about this here, money bail disproportionately impacts people with mental health conditions. Now, in New York City, only 12% of people with mental health conditions made bail compared to 21% of people without, even though bail amounts were comparable. Furthermore, it took five times as long for people with mental illness to make bail as those without, 48 days versus 9 days, okay? That's a horrible, these are horrible numbers, and really, in reality, the public, here we are in California, we're getting ready to vote and talk about this SB 10, but they don't really, I don't think everybody really knows the full story about this. And I really didn't either until I became a bail agent. And, and I really didn't understand the jail really until I started, taking people and booking them down there and putting them back in the custody and seeing like, damn, maybe this is the wrong choice to do, the wrong situation to do, for this. Maybe we should have given the person another chance. But again, everything is, it's variable right there. But anyways, it was a good experience to be able to do that. And at any rate, I learned a lot about how the jails function and about how people with mental illness, even though we have the medical center at the LA County Jail for people that have medical issues, if you walk in there and you see what's going on and you're booking somebody back into custody, you see that there are people just on top of each other, shackled, chained up. It's like looking at, you know, it really, it was like in line how they're checking them up. It's like looking at a video or an old movie of the Holocaust, you know, the Jews in the line, and they're putting them in there. They're taking their jewelry out, getting them into the shower, right? You know, I hate to say that, but that's the vision that I had. And I thought to myself, there's something wrong with this system here. So
let me interject right here, Carlos. Let me interject right here.
Yes.
When I was a student at UCLA, my last quarter, I did an independent study course. My major was political science. And the professor that I did the independent study course with, he was writing a book on recidivism rate in the state of California. So he had me do quite a bit of research. And part of the research was that I had to go back into the archives to the before California became a state. I think we became a state in like 1850. And so around 1850, what they would do with people that were incorrigibles or that broke the law and things like that, they would put them in mental institutions. And this went on for probably about a good maybe 50, 60 years until the turn of the century. Then they came up with these jails. And initially, what they would do was the slaves, the runaway slaves, the Indians, and people of color that they couldn't control or that they had done something to that had just really set them off, like steal their land, take their children, those type of things. They would put them in a mental institution, and the white people went to jail when they cut up. Or they even started sending the white men, because it was mostly men. There were very few women initially, but what they would do is they would send the white men to the military. And so they didn't have anyone in these. And so around 1900s, maybe 1910, they stopped putting people in the asylums and in the mental institutions because, you know, they were doing lobotomies and all these other atrocious things to people, experimenting on them and things like that. So they start putting them in jail. But
where
they
was
that at? That was
here in
California.
America?
That,
oh, no, that can't be California. I'm not going to believe that. Are you sure that was California?
Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
Oh, Lord. Don't say it so.
I was surprised, too. I was surprised, too. And let me tell you how I got to that. He wanted to know the recidivism rate in the state of California. And in order for me to find that, I had to go into the archives. And I had to start from statehood. And so when I went into the archives, I went into the Soundex. The Soundex is where they keep census records and things of that nature. And so I had to go into the census records and look at the penal institutions and get the numbers and the races and the sexes from there. And there's a distinct pattern of incarcerating or institutionalizing people of color. Once
that's true.
California was a free state. So when they couldn't handle a person, or if a person, there's a movie out about it. It's an old movie. It's Francis Farmer. Did you ever see that movie about Francis?
No, I didn't.
Francis Farmer. Okay. She was a Jewish lady, very bright woman, extremely bright, a genius in college. And she did not conform to society's whims. She was a writer, and she's a prolific writer, and just a free spirit. And whenever society can't control you, or when the general population doesn't view you as, if you're an anomaly or you're different from them, then they put some type of label on you, and they would institutionalize you. So what happened to Miss Farmer? I mean, she was an actress as well as a writer. And what happened to her? Her mother couldn't control her. She would say what she thought. She spoke out about Hitler. She spoke out about the wars and things like that. And the public didn't like it. The media didn't like it. The administration, the presidential administration didn't like it. So her mother put her in an institution, and they gave her a lobotomy. This
wow.
is what was done. This is our history. things that you saw in the jail were no different than what we were doing 100 years ago, 200 years ago. And that was putting people in the closet, if you will, or putting them in institutions so we don't have to see them. We don't have to deal with what the real problem is. And that's that people have mental illness, or people have gripes against society, or there are people that are different from the norm. There are people outside of the bell-shaped curve. And you put them in those institutions, and they're hidden away, and everybody else is robotic, and they just go along doing the doing what mainstream wants them to do. They're not bucking the system. They're not rocking the boat. They're not screaming and hollering or squeaking. The squeaky wheel is not going to get any oil because we're going to put the squeaky wheel away.
Right, and it's going to get greased, literally.
Historically, that's what we have done. If you go back, you look at the Black Panthers. They made them into such a horrible, bad group, but they weren't bad people. What they were trying to do was exercise their civil rights. They fed people. They had a breakfast program. They policed their own neighborhoods because the police that were policing it were killing them, were beating them to death.
That's true.
So you have a situation here where the American way is we say one thing, but we do something else. And this something else is embarrassing. We don't have a great human rights record while we had the civil rights movement. If everything was fine and hunky-dory, we wouldn't have picketed. We wouldn't have marched. We wouldn't have had lunch counter sit-ins, you know. And even in that, the people weren't doing anything, and they still killed them. The administration still killed them. They sick dogs on them. The dogs were biting women in their breasts. They wet them up with water hoses. I mean, and this was televised stuff. So we don't have, violence is as American as apple pie and Chevrolet.
Correct.
You know, so what you saw in the jails, that's the norm. It's just that. The average Joe Blow, myself, you, whoever, we're so busy with our nose to the grind trying to make it and stay afloat and maintain our piece of the American dream that we don't venture off into that. It doesn't affect us unless we work in that area. It doesn't touch on our life, you know, and it's so wretched that we don't want it to touch on our life. You know, you have to really shut down a lot of attorneys, especially criminal law attorneys. They're alcoholics just because of this. You know, you fight, you try to keep your client out of jail. You do the best you can for them. But the system is such that it's very unforgiving. Somebody's got to pay. Even if it's the wrong guy, they've got to pay. That's
right.
The ideology. That's the mentality. You know,
it's sad. It's really, really sad.
Yeah,
it's pathetic,
even like
and sad.
DNA. Yeah, but like DNA technology, you know, you hear about all the people that have been released from jail because they were erroneously convicted, and the DNA technology, you know, whatever it was a rape case, or if it was, you know, some DNA cells were left at the scene of the crime, and they were finally tested because we have the modern technology now that can determine, you know, if this is the right person or not. Even with that, the mentality in this country is that, okay, fine, they didn't do it, but somebody has to pay. Somebody has to go to jail. We have to have retribution. This is not a country where you can just things can go without being resolved. That was like the bar. When we took the bar or when we were in law school, people that see things black and white, on or off, up or down, they could not deal with the law. And the law can be, sometimes there is no retribution. Sometimes there is no answer. Sometimes the law could be a iffy kind of situation. If you're in one jurisdiction, it might be a crime. If you're in another, it may not be. We have 50 states with 50 different laws. California, we have a history of incarcerating the mentally ill. And that came about from our history. We stopped putting them in the institutions. And then if you look back also, when Ronald Reagan was president, he closed down the mental institutions. So the people that are out there homeless on the streets, those people had somewhere to live and had somewhere to go until he said, well, we're going to save money and we're going to put these people out. And it's just ironic that he would die of Alzheimer's,
right,
of a mental condition.
Let's talking about that, you know, I do a lot of jail visits when people call in for bail, and then I go down to the county or wherever, to Wayside, and I speak with them. And when I get down there to speak with these individuals that may be eligible for bail or are eligible for bail, and then I go to interview them because I want to hear their story. I want to hear what happened to them. I want to hear, you know, where they've been. I want to know what's going on with them, because everybody, even though the crime that they're being accused of, they haven't been convicted yet. These are all individuals that have been just allegedly, you know, through circumstances or whatever the case might be, a witness, a bogus witness sometimes, you know, they're being remained and they cannot afford the bail. Now, some of these bails are low, $35,000, $50,000. That's not really low, but it is for some in California. And the crimes that they're being accused of, petty theft of all things, and we know whether there's some other things in there, but the thing about it is they can't really bail out because, well, they can. Everybody's guaranteed the right to bail except for those that society or the judge deems to be a problem, you know, to society or to the community, or that it just doesn't qualify for bail. And, you know, some of these people are in there, and they're just – not some, a lot of people are in there. They have no family members. Or maybe the requirements to bail out, they just don't cut. They don't make it to the cut. And I thought that was very, very – it was horrible because some of them have been on there for 2 years, 3 years. Well, you know, because they're fighting their case. They don't want to be guilty. So they're going to sit there for a $35,000 bail because no one wants to approve them because they don't have a cosign or something like that. And that is why I know that we got together in January and we formed that Above Below Technology GPS Monitoring Center, because the In Re Humphrey law that came out in January 2018 really was a springboard to assist these individuals with their right to be able to be bailed out with other factors such as a GPS monitor, or you know, in our case with the nonprofit, because it's a nonprofit, we do reductions for bail in there. We're able to do that and go in there and because we specialize in that, and ask for a bail reduction, or just, you know, knock it out and do the in a GPS monitor. I like to do a combination because it always sort of works out, but it doesn't work out for everybody. And this In Re Humphrey case is really tipping the curb, you know, the scale. And there's a lot other people. There's more people now that are starting to use GPS monitor, or more courts that are actually starting to acknowledge this, you know, instead of bail. But, you know, that's where we're at right now. We're in bail reform. But the whole thing about mental illness, first of all, I don't believe they should be in with the general population, not because they could be dangerous. It's because the others might be dangerous to them. They're not in the appropriate situation, and they may be being more harmed by being in there. You know, if it's a low bail or something, kick them out on a GPS monitor, period. You know, if the bail companies don't like that, then they should have bailed them out with a low bail and found a way to make it happen. But the main thing is that, you know, at least I'm approaching this and you're approaching this, and that's why we have our bail company. That's why we're doing a nonprofit for the monitoring companies, that, you know, everybody deserves a chance. And, you know, we may not trust you enough to just be out there on your own without a GPS monitor. The GPS monitor is great. It helps other people that may be not eligible for – they might not be eligible for regular bail because based on the requirements. Now, this show about race and bail in America, you know, talking about the jails, you know, we have to also talk about the bail companies too. Because it is an eclectic mix of everybody. Everybody wants to point the finger at the reformists for bail, like meaning that there's no bail anymore. They want to point the finger at in many other places, you know, the bail industry in itself. But there's a lot of intricate types of things that need to be in sync and working in order for this whole thing to work together. And I happen to believe there should be a system. The reform should include a system which includes alternative solutions to being detained during pretrial, such as GPS monitor and bail combinations, because that seems to work, but low bail. So my thing is that the bail schedule, which is set for LA County, needs to be addressed. It's archaic. It's obsolete. Okay. It is, you know, meaning that the people that set the bail schedule, even though they might have that they might be the judges and everything in court, but the bail agents are actually the ones that really get down to the nitty gritty, talking to the people and know really how much people can afford. You know, $100,000 for a statutory bail is unrealistic for somebody that is homeless. Or that might be have 5 or 6 kids, and they're working. Or maybe they're the sole provider of their family of income. I mean, it's just unrealistic, and so that's what we're fighting at right now. And I think that a lot of people that are for bail reform are looking at the extreme. Like, you know, all these are disparities. Just get rid of bail in itself, and then we'll just go for this. But I think there should be some other types of we can work this out. I think it begins with the bail schedule, and I think the encompassing you know, elements of the In re Humphrey case, I think that's really, really good too. Actually very, very important, because it really cuts across the board, and bail is supposed to be colorless, okay? There's no when people call a bail agency, you're not supposed to be saying, are you Mexican, are you black, are you a gypsy, what's going on here? Or what about this one? That I found a lot is, we don't do prostitute bail here. Now, what the hell is that? We don't do prostitutes over here. Well, everybody else is doing them, okay? But when they get arrested, Nobody wants to do nothing except point their finger, just like the Scarlet S, and that's where we're at. And then we're going to have a lot of shows on that, okay? This is going to be, you know, a show that that I know that some people are going to be happy about, some people are not going to be happy. But I'm not here to make any friends, okay, on the bail industry. I'm here to change things and transform things for the better of not only the community, the community that we derive our money from, that we service, but also for those working in the industry in terms of workers' rights and making this whole thing in sync. So I believe we do need a revamp, and the revamp is in all levels, inside the bail agencies, the bail agencies themselves, retraining the bail agents, you know, statutory bail reduced, a good race relations class for bail agents, I think would be good, because I've been places where they've you know, when somebody calls up to the agency and they say, you know, first of all, they're not supposed to ask what color they are, but then they ask, well, what color are you? What's your race? They say, well, we're African American, you know, like, well, damn. So then they, you know, put it on hold, the phone on hold, and they're like, don't offer that person the regular bail, make it a little bit, you know, the requirements a little bit higher, because we don't know if they're going to pay later on. And I actually had somebody tell me in my face, you know, I'm not prejudiced or race or anything like that, but quote unquote, black people just don't pay. Okay. And I was like, can you believe that? Okay. I was like, holy do right there. You're talking to me, okay, about this. You know, she's talking to me in my face, and I've gone to a place where they said the same thing, and I thought it was horrible. I didn't say anything because I was just, you know, beginning my bail journey. It's awful, and those are the types of things that need to be reformed and addressed also. So it's just not the bail reform at state level, but it's bail reform at local and also into in bail agency level too. You know, so these are all the things that – yes.
Who do you think should address it, the state or?
Well, first of all, I think that L.A. County.
The state licenses, since the state licenses the bail bond agencies, do you think they should, you know, they should monitor it, or they should make sure that the bail agents or the bail company is not discriminating against people?
Yes, I do. I think they should be monitoring phone conversations a little bit more adamantly, you know, as they come from jail to the bail agencies, because that's the only way you're going to get to know what's really going on. I think there should be audits of the records to see how many people of color, how many people called there, link it to the people, and, you know, the statistical information. But I also think that we need more training, you know, with bail agents to be able to know what about different calls, about people that are the same sex relationships, you know, sexual orientation. There's so much, you know, adversity towards that. Like, you know, when somebody calls from jail and then you find out, you know, like we went down to go do a jail visit one day And I come back and I'm like, well, I got good news and I got bad news. The good news, they seem pretty nice and they're transgender. The bad news is that they have a hold for some other county, and they just about flipped and said that all of that is just bad. We don't want to bail out the transgender person because transgender people are just not, they're on the cusp of society. Therefore, why should we even think they're going to pay? I thought I was going to be floored, you know. So I've experienced a lot of different things, and that's why, all of us got together and formed this American Bail Agents Union in hopes of a better day, hopes of a better.
What about Bruce Jenner? He's transgender. I mean, they wouldn't bail him out. He's got a lot of money.
Money changes everything. You know what I'm saying? You know, and so, sorry the pun, but you know, if there's notoriety and stars, that falls under something different, because remember in California we have something called celebrity justice, right? And so some of the bail things are a little bit different for them, or the way that they're bailed out. You know, it's just we'll go into a show about celebrity justice probably later on about bailing out celebrities. I have a lot of experience with that, and it's a total different trip. It's a just totally different aspect. But I think that even though we have to make money, it's a private industry. I think we should be monitored a little bit more by the state and the federal government. I think that the Department of Insurance, in order to make sure that we're doing our job, I think, since we're working with the community, I think that they should have us do, yearly classes, or have the bail agencies make sure that they have race workshops on race and on sexual orientation differences and everything that you can imagine about, when somebody calls in that's been allegedly detained for a crime, that solicitation, the theory is that the prostitutes in LA are on something called the circuit. The circuit means that they're flighty, it's risky to take a chance with them. If you bail them out, they're going to take off and you never see them again. I know some people that have a lot of money we've bailed out, and we've never seen them ever again. Okay, we've had to go to different countries to chase their ass down. So, and they weren't a prostitute. But when they call in, the typical response is, no, we don't do, our agency doesn't do prostitution bail. I'm sorry, we don't bail out prostitutes here. Or our surety doesn't allow us to do prostitutes. And I'm like, I can't imagine anything so much more illegal, breaking federal and state violation, of different laws, and denying people their right to bail. They're only being accused of something, not convicted. And even if they do, prostitutes are people too. So we're gonna have a show on that also about that, and that's also too about GPS monitors. You know, if you think they're gonna be taken to the circuit, means that their girls, as soon as you bail them out, they're gonna go from here up to Fresno. And work some men up there, get rolls, roll some men up there, right? Because prostitutes are bad, ladies, and men too, because there's some men in there too. Then from there, they're going to go up to San Francisco after they roll a few people up there and pick up a few more charges, and that they don't pay and they get bailed out. They don't get bailed out. Then they go up to Lake Tahoe, and then from to Vegas, maybe, or Lake Tahoe, Reno, Las Vegas, and San Bernardino, and then San Bernardino. Back to Orange County, back to LA again. So they're like on the circuit, they call it. So, that right there is so stereotyped and so, far-fetched. It's ridiculous. I mean, there might be that out there, but it doesn't mean that they're not going to pay bail, because a lot of these people had co-signers, et cetera, and they just weren't bailed out because of the fact they were just there for fraud. That is like kind of that's bad news. So we're going to be addressing all of that and what I think how that could be addressed too. But at any rate, race and bail in 2018 in America, as we can see, there's a lot of differences there about, the different ethnic groups that it compared. And also, too, bailing out, two people get arrested for the same crime. One bails out, one doesn't. So I can tell you who's going to get the raw end of the deal. And if there's statistics back this up too, I don't have it with me tonight, but I'll bring it in. The person that gets to stay in jail fighting his crime usually gets the raw end of the deal and ends up doing, say, prison time, and ends up taking a deal out of duress, or because they're just so goddamn tired about staying in there, they just can't, they're being forced to take this deal, or, threatened and to taking a deal. the one that's on the outside, the if they take a jury trial or whatever trial it is, the whole court looks at them different. They're in a suit and tie. You know, they come in, they're with their wife, their kids. Everything looks so different than it does for the person being part. And those people end up getting community service, case dismissed, don't come back here, you know, whatever the case might be. They end up getting their cases resolved very, very quickly. It's a very, very sad thing. So that's also why in our AB technology, or above, below technology, a GPS monitoring center, you know, we can also work with attorneys there too and go to court with them. I've done it already a few times. And then if they're eligible for a GPS monitor at that time, and, you know, we can be right there to put it on for them and they can walk free and then, you know, go get their stuff together, get their life together, you know, prepare for the court case, go get yourself, you know, if you need to get legal counsel somewhere else, figure it out, you know, get ready. If you think you're going to do, say, prison time, well, prepare, get your family ready, get yourself ready, close up everything up so you can, you know, start your time. So you at least you're conforming to the, you know, the principles of our justice system, right? But what do you think about all of that? You know, what we just talked about, I mean, this is just ridiculous, some of the things that are happening here.
Yeah, well, you know, it's systemic in our society that you're going to have people that are going to discriminate if they could get away with it.
Right.
You're going to have people that will use their position to advance their agenda. It's just the American way. The exposing these people, though, is something else. Once they're exposed, especially they're doing it under the guise of being a bail agent, a state licensed bail agent, and they're not upholding the Constitution. They're not upholding their oath as a bail agent. So those things do need to be exposed. Those people or those companies that are doing that, people need to know who they are, and the government does too, because it really puts the government in a bad position in light of the fact that this is a regulated activity, a government regulated, state government regulated activity. And so to basically let them run amok and do whatever they want to do and determine who's worthy and who's not, it's sort of like a doctor deciding who gets the surgery and who doesn't, who gets the kidney and who doesn't, who gets the heart and who doesn't, you know. It's just, you know, there has to be some fairness about the situation, and it's up to the people to, you know, open up and look at it and not just turn a blind eye to it.
Well, Ms. Curtis, we're going to take a short break right now, and we're going to be back for our last half. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Smiling faces show no traces of the evil that lurks within. Smiling faces sometimes they don't tell the truth. Smiling faces tell lies, and I got proof.
You don't have to stay in jail if you can't afford the bail. Get out of jail for $199 on a GPS monitor. On Thursday, January 25, 2018, a state appeals court cast doubt on the constitutionality of bail system in California, saying the common practice of setting cash amounts so high that a suspect can't afford them is justified only for those who are too dangerous to release before trial. The court's ruling could change the state's approach to bail. The In Re Humphrey is a case where the appellate court argues that courts must take into account a person's ability to pay bail because otherwise poor people are being discriminated against in money bail systems. The appellate court also suggested that trial courts consider non-money bail conditions of release such as GPS monitoring or residential rehabilitation. Above Below Technology is a California nonprofit community organization founded in 2018 as an educational resource center exclusively focusing on the public safety of the community and providing the courts with alternative conditions of free trial release and bail reform, supporting the constitutional rights and civil liberties of defendants. Our mission is to provide affordable bail solutions for the moderate, low-income, and indigent that historically have been denied their Eighth Amendment constitutional right of due process as a result of their socioeconomic status. Our monitoring center is open 24/7 and operated by trained professionals to secure the safety of the community. We are available anytime to place and install the GPS monitor on a defendant at their court hearing, at a bail bonds company when they come out of jail for the bail agent, at the correctional facility, or where they're housed and when they are released from jail. We provide expert witness testimony and certified reports to both the court and law enforcement. Low-level offenders don't have to stay in jail anymore if they can't afford the bail. Get out of jail for as low as $199. Well, welcome back, Ms. Curtis. This is Carlos Montenegro, ladies and gentlemen, licensed California bail agent and chairman of the American Bail Agents Union of America. And tonight's show is a premier show for our 2018 called California Bail Reform 2018, Race and Bail in America. I want to say California, so that's a Freudian slip right there, but let's just get right down to it, okay? Race and Bail in America. Now, I wanted to, before we even get on to there, I wanted to talk about this educate the general public that aren't bail agents out there. What is the definition of bail? Now, bail is the security given by the accused that he will appear and answer before the proper court the accusation brought against him and includes a bail bond or a personal bond. The definition of a bail bond. A bail bond is a written undertaking entered into by the defendant and the defendant's sureties for the appearance of the principal therein before a court or magistrate to answer a criminal accusation, provided, however, that the defendant on execution of the bail bond may deposit with the custodian of funds of the court in which the prosecution is pending current money of the United States in the amount of the bond in lieu of having securities signing the same. Any cash funds deposited under this article shall be receipted for by the officer receiving the funds and on an order of the court. So the person that's arrested, they can post a cash bond, which is they act as their own surety. And the surety is the company which gives the money to the bail agency for the defendant to get out. So it can be either way. And usually when a defendant is using the – no one, you know, usually when you're put in jail, a person's in jail, they don't have all the money to put down in cash because the if you do a cash bond, you have to put the full amount. If it's $50,000, $50,000 cash. If it's using the surety or the bail bonds company, in California it's 10%, so you would put down $5,000. Some make you could do monthly payments, it's called a premium. Some companies do as low as 1% down with proper documentation and paperwork. But here we are tonight talking about race and bail in America and about the unequal access to the Eighth Amendment right that all people have in jail except for those that are deemed a threat to society or that the judge says just no way, Jose, they ain't getting out. Or 1275 bail hold, which is a hold on the person. They cannot bail out until they identify where the funds for the bail are derived from. And I want to let everybody know that at Above Below Technology, we also do 1275 bail hold hearing documentation to present to the court. And we also do motions for reduction of bail, which seem to be quite popular these days in order to get somebody's bail reduced from $1 million, maybe to $50,000, okay, or reduced to zero and out with a GPS monitor. There's a lot of things that are happening throughout the state of California. Los Angeles may not be the best place to gauge everything, but throughout Sacramento, Northern California, San Diego, and different places, and even Los Angeles, there's a lot of judges that have become more In re Humphrey, I guess, cooperative and sensitive to. And so that's where we're at right now. So any rate, that is about the GPS monitoring that I want to talk about and alternative ways of getting out and about the definition of bail. Ms. Curtis, do you have anything that you would like to say to add to this?
Yeah, I would like to say that also the bail system is ensuring that the person will report or will come back to court on the days that they're scheduled. And so if a person doesn't have a record of failing to appear for court, it really shouldn't be a problem with getting them back there. But I also wanted to ask you this when you were talking about the rate of bail and how high the bail was. Your bail wasn't always at these astronomical amounts. I mean, I don't recall hearing about million-dollar bails unless it was a murder case. But we have million-dollar bails for accusations of child abuse, child endangerment, domestic
theft.
Violence. Yeah, theft. I mean, you know, I don't know if it's inflation. Do you think it's inflation that's caused these prices to go up?
No, let's talk about this, okay? When I first got in the bail, and I had one client that had, she was 18 years old, went to a party, drank a little bit, maybe a little bit too much, was coming home, ran over a pedestrian, run their bicycle, killed them, just straight out killed them. She went to jail. She got booked. Her parents came in, and they posted $100,000 to get her out because that's the first time. That's usually $100,000 for felony drunk driving with, killing somebody. So she was out $100,000 as opposed to somebody that might be there for domestic violence second time. That might be $100,000, maybe even more, $150,000, $200,000, because they might have had some other, crimes in the past, alleged mens or even convictions, and which, enhance their bail, the bail schedule and the statutory bail, which they received. And I thought to myself, damn, that's so strange that she was driving home drinking and driving. and she ran over a pedestrian on a bicycle, straight out killed them, and then she's going home in 8 hours on $100,000 bail. Family came in, posted a $10,000 with nothing, no problem. They put the collateral up, and it was nothing, okay? Now, you know, yeah. I guess my question would be, and she was white, if the person had been black or if they had been Latin, do you think they would have got out? I mean, even though it was $100,000, do you think we would have let them out? We probably would have added a whole bunch of other stuff. We, instead of two co-signers, in this case, it was just mom and dad that co-signed. But in usually in the requirements for minorities, which I'm, you know, I would like to see an investigation done by the state of California and also federal government into the bail industry all over the United States, but here in California especially, because I think that there's a need to straighten out these inequities in terms of how bail agencies treat the defendants that call in from jail. You know, it's just unequal, you know. And I know that, you know, when I decided to open up my own agency, I we're there to make money, but at the same time, we're not there to fleece the community either or to, you know, offer unrealistic types of requirements that that are not the same for white people or for other types of nationalities. Now, there are other groups, too, that get bashed in on this race and bail in America, gypsies. Gypsies are a cast of people, a group of people that obviously we're here in America, just like you and me and everybody else are here. We've got American Indian gypsies, everybody else is dead. But it's typical for many bail agencies that if they find out if the individual's a gypsy on the phone, they are not going to bail them out, more than likely. Or the requirements are you know, and astronomical. And I'm not going to go on this show about, you know, how and how they determine that, because that's just not this show. But there's a lot of different things that are happening out there that it just needs to be cleaned up a little bit. Now, in terms of the bail, the amount of bail that's being offered to individuals that are in jail, that is with the bail schedule. And I know that you have your own thoughts about the bail schedule. Can you share that with us tonight?
Well, from all indications, the bail schedule is created by judges. The Superior Court judges meet with the limited jurisdiction judges, and they come up with the bail schedule for the infractions, meaning your parking tickets, your moving violations, your speeding tickets, things like that. Then the unlimited jurisdiction, which would be the Superior Court judges, they come up with the bail schedule for felonies, for your felonies, your high crime misdemeanors, and things of that nature. And they vote on it, and that becomes the amount that the bail agent is to charge. Well, that's what the police are to charge. When they charge that crime, they look at the bail schedule. They come up with the bail amount from the schedule. If the person's been to jail before or had a prior conviction, then you have your enhancements. Those are added on too, which smacks dead in the face of the prohibition against double jeopardy. Because if you've been to jail and you've done your time, which is what this whole judicial system is about. The judicial system is the people's way of extracting revenge or retribution for the wrong that a person has done against society. So you go to jail, or you're convicted and you do time, or you take a deal or whatever the case may be for one thing, and then 5 years or 2 years or a year down the lane, something else happens, something totally different, not the same type of situation, and they'll take that conviction to use to enhance the bail as well as the charges against the person. So you never, ever really serve your time, or you're never exonerated from that crime. However, we do have Prop 47. It does help you to get a job. But
okay, yeah, let's talk about Prop 47, how that can help people that are being accused of crimes that are in actually the court process, even though it has nothing to do with bail, but it does later on, because it does have to do with sentencing, and it could actually reduce an individual's I guess it could, you know, if the charges are dropped made from felony, prior convictions, felony to misdemeanor, yeah, that would actually enhance the actual allegement if convicted for the what they're in court for. So that also it does have, you know, everything's hand in hand with has to do with bail. But I think that the Prop 47 is definitely a winner for individuals who are currently facing a trial, or if they're pretrial detention or whatever the case might be, you know, getting ready for fight their case. You know, so definitely try to get your Prop 47 paperwork done as soon as possible, you know, even if you're in trial, so that at the end, you know, that you don't get any enhancements, you know, for felonies in the past. Maybe they might be erased by that time, or misdemeanors not looked upon the same as a felony in enhancement time.
Right. And even individuals that are currently incarcerated, they could utilize Prop 47 to reduce their convictions to misdemeanors if they're felonies. And then their time would have to be recalculated and probably would result in early release. It would result in early release. But that brings us back to the pretrial custody or pretrial detainment or incarceration. That doesn't help the person that's in there. Well, it could. Prop 47 could help that person, because if they're using a prior crime to enhance the bail, it could reduce the bail. Okay, but it could also reduce the charge, you know, or the if you get rid of the enhancement, then that will reduce the bail. So that would help a person. That could definitely help a person. Prop 47 could for pretrial. So, you know, it's some things. There are some good things out there, but they're not talking about it. I would think Prop 47, it should have been blabbed all over the news media. They should have made a public service announcement, you know, to help people get back into the swing of things. You know, you go to jail. Okay, so you're doing the time to pay for the crime that you did. Okay, fine. Once you get out, you can't get a job, and you can't get a job because you have conviction. And then some convictions result in a situation where you can't even get housing. Some people can't get Section 8 because they have a felony conviction. It might be a sex crime or something like that. So they cannot. I had a friend that had that problem. He couldn't get Section 8. He was sick. He's on dialysis. He's in bad shape, but he can't get housing because he had a conviction where he had to register as a sex offender. So he was luckily to get rid of that Prop 47, to get rid of that conviction through Prop 47 and able to get housing. Now, I had a situation happen the other day. Digressing back to the mental illness issue, where a young man had been paroled from state prison. He was on medication. He had quite a few mental issues, and he got into an altercation with another person. They were inebriated, probably were fighting over, you know, one used more of the drugs than the other did, or drank more of the alcohol than the other did. But anyway, he was incarcerated because he was black. He had a fight with a white guy, so he was black, so they put him in jail. But the clincher
same
was,
old, same old. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the mother contacted me to do a bail reduction motion. So I did the motion, and his parole officer said he wasn't going to violate him and that he would monitor him if he was released pretrial. He monitored the GPS. So I get to court on the motion, and the defendant's attorney says he doesn't want the guy out. And I'm like, I can't believe this. You don't want your client out. So there's also some pervasiveness in the system with the defense attorney. You know, I asked the attorney, I said, well, why don't you want him out? He says, well, in my opinion, he should stay in because he's going to do time. And so he might as well just stay in there to get himself some credit. And I'm like, I can't believe this.
What does that mean? Get himself some credit? Are we talking about, like, you know, like credit for school? Well, what's he talking about? That's ridiculous.
I can't believe it. I can't believe it.
It's a bad situation here.
Yeah. So we have very jaded system, you know, where the defense attorney, whether it's the public defender or private counsel, believes that their client should not be out. You know, and this man had verifiable mental illness. Not only that, the prosecutor was agreeable that the guy should be out. He said, I want some bail, and the monitor sounds good to me, and I want him to go through our program to get him enrolled in a mental illness program so that we know he's in it, and he can go to a private program. And but the gentleman, the defendant's own attorney, says, I don't want him out.
Okay. So, okay, that's one. So we know that all this stuff is going on. Now, we recently had the opportunity. I had the jail visit with a gentleman that was facing, there was a conviction of murder. But he already went to trial one time. And it was, what was it? I forgot the nature of the case. Was it a case dismissed or was it?
It was a mistrial.
So he had been in jail all this time for 4 years, all right? He wasn't even out on the outside when the murders happened, okay? So he has this very, very high bail. So he calls in for a motion for reduction of bail. And so we already know statistics say that two people accused of the same thing, you know, one fights it from the outside, one fights it from the inside. The one that fights it from the inside gets the okey-doke, okay, all the time. And this is a serious case. So we go to, and his goal was to fight this case from the outside or even just for the trial so that the jury would be able to see him as a free man and see him different than they would as if he were in custody, which could have made a difference. So he had a mistrial, but then they filed again. So at the and when they filed again, he was still in custody. Now, he was there for 4.5 years, which is shameful. But at any rate, so he we go to file for the motion for reduction of bail, and that his attorney never did for him, a state-appointed attorney, never gave him the opportunity. So right before we file it, I get a call from the attorney, and, you know, he blasts off on me and says that he doesn't want me to file this motion for him, which he's entitled and proper to do, or to ask anybody he wants to do it so he can fight his case on the outside. And even though he had a mistrial in the first one, he told me that he did not want me to do it, so he wouldn't allow it to happen. So he convinced the family not to allow it to happen, which was a big mistake. And it's from a mistrial, now we're going, I believe, he's serving, he was just convicted guilty yesterday, and I think he's doing 329 years behind bars.
Oh my God, that's phenomenal.
Right. But that was on advice of the state attorney. Now, the gentleman wasn't even, you know, there at the scene or anything. There are various witnesses that claim that he wasn't. We have a witness that was there when it happened that got up and said, please don't put this man in jail. I was there. He wasn't even there. We don't even know who he is. So at any rate, that was just because he had a gang affiliation when he was 13 years old. The man's almost 30 years old now. He spent most of his life in jail. What kind of affiliation is that? So now he's, at the time for an appeal. But at the same time, things could have been different if he had posted bail or that the bail wasn't so high. I mean, there's all kind of GPS monitoring. I mean, they know where he's at. He could have been under house arrest, you know, during that time. That GPS monitoring at all comes. They have geofence, but they can monitor it. And if he's supposed to be at home, just stay at home.
Right. No, I got that. I get all of that. Whew.
You know, it's sad.
That's horrible. 300. How many years?
I believe 329 years. It was like three lifetime type things. But prior to this, the state attorney thought it was.
Or was this attempted murder? Was it a murder or was it attempted murder?
There was a murder situation that happened that there was four people that were murdered, all when he was in state prison. He doesn't even know the people that did it. Even they admitted he wasn't a part of it, but they still convicted him. But his attorney told him, instead of doing bail, just take a deal. And the deal was 79 years in jail. You know, that's a good deal for you, okay? Very good deal.
Wow. He should have fired him when he told him to take the deal.
Right. It's really sad because they did try to change attorneys. The court refused it. So he's got a good premise to have an appeal done and granted his favor. But at any rate, these are the situations that we're living in, and I can only speak for California. But we're living in this situation where there's so much unequal access and you know, to the system where it's not the same across the board. I happen to believe things should be, you know, can be, you know, judged accordingly. But, you know, if you're there to defend somebody, at least give them the opportunity to bail out of jail if they want to, if somebody's going to, if they meet the requirements so that they can show up to that court and show the court, because showing up to every court date would be key to a jury seeing that, well, this person didn't take off. So, you know, they must be a little bit more, you know, they must be okay. And so these are all the things that they couldn't do or have the opportunity that we'll never know if they had been allowed to post bail or even, you know, had the bail reduction hearing, which is really, really horrible. But Ms. Curtis, you know, thank you for coming tonight to our, again, you're going to be the co-host with me on this, you know, 2018 California bail reform year. And we're going to bring up lots and lots of different controversial topics. And maybe even, you know, we definitely are going to be speaking to many agents across the United States, hopefully many in local also, and some, you know, organization founders and leaders to see where this bail reform movement is going. And how
okay,
do we make this?
Sounds good to me.
And how do we do this? Do you have any closing remarks for us before we check out?
All I can say is just keep up the good fight. That's all.
That's right. Now, you're the owner of Boss Bail Bonds, and ladies and gentlemen. Boss Bail Bonds is located in the beautiful historic Lafayette Park area next to MacArthur's Park area in Los Angeles. And Boss Bail Bonds is located at 539 South Rampart Boulevard, Suite 201, Los Angeles, California, 90057. And if you happen to have an individual, a loved one, in jail where the bail is really, really high and they haven't been given a chance to have a motion for bail reduction, give Above Below Technology a call to talk about GPS monitoring or lowering the bail in court for you. For more information, call 1-833-7-TECHNO. That's 7-T-E-C-H-N-O or 1-833-783-2466. And Above Below Technology Center is a California nonprofit community organization. Ladies and gentlemen, Ms. Curtis, thank you for everything tonight. This is Carlos Antonio Montenegro, licensed California bail agent and chairman of the American Bail Agents Union of America. Thanking you for coming to our show tonight for California Bail Reform 2018. Tonight's topic was race and bail in America. I'll see you next week at 8 o'clock on Friday. Have a great evening. Have a good weekend. Bye.